You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. We're going to get to our segment on hard seltzer momentarily, but we have breaking news. The initial report on the disastrous fire of the Conception early Labor Day morning, that ship that caught fire just 20 yards off the shore of Santa Cruz Island in the Channel Islands. We have the first report that is scheduled to come out within about 10 days of the accident. The National Transportation Safety Board has released it. I've just gotten the two-page report, and I'm going to read from this. Now, this is not the final report. That could be a year or more away. But let me really read some select paragraphs of this report. Initial interviews of three crew members revealed no mechanical or electrical issues were reported. At the time of the fire, five crew members were asleep in berths behind the wheelhouse, and one, and that's the top deck, by the way, and one crew member was asleep in the bunk room, which was accessed from the salon down a ladder well in the forward starboard corner of the compartment. The bunk room had an emergency escape hatch located on the aft end, which also exited to the salon. There were two locally sounding smoke detectors in the overhead of the bunk room. A crew member sleeping in the wheelhouse berths was awakened by a noise and got up to investigate. He saw a fire at the aft end of the sun deck, rising up from the salon compartment below. The crew member alerted the crew behind the wheelhouse. As crew members awoke, the captain radioed a distressed message to the Coast Guard. The crew members attempted to access the salon and passengers below. Unable to use the aft ladder, which was on fire, the crew members jumped down to the main deck. One crew member broke his leg in the process, and tried to access the salon and galley compartment, which was fully engulfed by fire at the aft end and by thick smoke in the forward end through a forward window. Unable to open the window and overwhelmed by smoke, the crew member jumped overboard, the crew jumped overboard. Two crew members and the captain swam to the stern, reboarded the vessel, opened the hatch to the engine room, and saw no fire. Access to the salon through the aft doors was blocked by fire, so they launched a small skiff and picked up the remaining two crew members in the water. They transferred to a recreational vessel anchored nearby, the Grape Escape, where the captain continued to radio for help, while two crew members returned to the Conception to search for survivors around the burning hull. Local Coast Guard and fire departments arrived on scene to extinguish the fire and conduct search and rescue. The vessel burned to the waterline by morning and subsequently sank in about 60 feet of water. It goes on to say later in the report, investigators have collected documents from recent Coast Guard inspections and visited another Truth Aquatics vessel, Vision, a vessel similar to the Conception. Salvage operations to bring the wreckage to the surface for examination and documentation have begun. Investigators plan to examine current regulations regarding vessels of this type, year of build and operation, early warning and smoke detection and alarm systems, evacuation routes, training, and current company policies and procedures. Efforts continue to determine the source of the fire. So this is the preliminary report, as you heard, largely based on interviews with the crew members, as opposed to forensics of the wreckage of the Conception, which they're looking at raising what remains of the Conception, raising that from the floor, about 60 feet of water, and then doing forensics to better understand what happened with it. We have a copy of the report. AirTalk has tweeted it out on our Twitter account if you want to see it. It sounds as though from this report, if I'm reading this accurately, that there was not a crew member who was awake overnight, as my understanding is, according to the Coast Guard, as is required in a vessel like this that has those 34 individuals sleeping in the bunks down below. Because this says five crew members were asleep in berths behind the wheelhouse. That would seem to indicate they were not complying with the demand for having a crew member who was awake and alert and able to be on lookout overnight as people sleep. We'll undoubtedly have additional details later this afternoon right here on 89.3 KPECC. We turn our attention now to the growing popularity of hard seltzer. I hadn't even heard of this market category, but apparently White Claw is incredibly popular, is even sold out in many locations, and you have other major beverage manufacturers like AB, Anheuser-Busch, who have come up with their own versions like Natural Light. Joining us to talk about what's happened with this beverage that's blown up recently, Craig Giamona, who covers the cannabis, beverage, food, and restaurant industries for Bloomberg. Craig, good to have you with us. So what is hard seltzer?
Well, it's basically seltzer with alcohol in it. It's one way to think about it is kind of like LaCroix or some of those popular brands, but essentially with alcohol. And it's, as you mentioned, it's an incredibly popular and fast-growing segment of the alcohol industry at this point.
Who are the people drinking it?
Mainly young people. I mean, I think it skews younger. There was a notion when it first started that I think it skewed female a little bit, but there's certainly plenty of young men drinking it. But I do think sort of people over 40 or wherever you want to draw the line, maybe 35, really haven't heard of it or it's not on the radar, but it's incredibly popular kind of with younger drinkers, so sort of young millennials and even some of those older Gen Z drinkers.
Is this much the same audience that would drink Mike's Hard Lemonade or other flavored malt beverage products, or is this seen as breaking through to a demographic that wouldn't have consumed those types of beverages?
You know, in my opinion, I think it's breaking through a little bit. It's interesting that the company that makes Mike's Hard Lemonade are the people that make White Claw. But really what's happened here is that these beverages are, you know, lower calorie and often gluten-free. So, you know, Mike's Hard Lemonade is incredibly sweet. So, I mean, that's something that maybe you drink in high school or in your college days. With White Claw, what they've done here is, you know, because it has that 100 calorie, you know, people are just so calorie conscious these days and less sugar, there is a much wider audience, in my opinion, for the products.
All right. Also with us, Eric Schmidt, Director of Alcohol Research at the Beverage Marketing Corporation. Thank you, Eric, for being with us. What are your thoughts about how this beverage has been able to break through, particularly with younger drinkers?
Well, I think that younger drinkers, you know, the younger segment of the population is very health conscious. I think that, you know, there's a wide trend towards sober curious. So a lot of these people don't drink at all. And if they do drink, there's the, you know, the perception that, you know, drinking a seltzer is healthier. They're lower in calories. It's more natural. So I think that that's kind of a lot of the trends that are you know, kind of bucking this whole, you know, hard seltzer, you know, trend going on.
How does the marketing of the products reflect that?
Well, I think a lot of it is, you know, it's going through social media. It's going, you know, a lot of viral stuff. White Claw just came out with stuff that you know, kind of went viral. And it's a lot of word of mouth. I mean, the younger population, it's not so much, you know, where you're going to see, you know, mainstream ads. It's more word of mouth. It's, you know, it's kind of growing that way. And I think marketers are really kind of pushing the advertising that way or you know, their expenditures that way.
I was reading an article that it's gender-neutral advertising showing women, young women and men together. It's not sexualized as often you see in beer commercials that are aimed at men. And I wonder if that's because that was their sense of who was already attracted to the beverage or if this was consciously from the beginning an approach that they were going to take. What do you think, Eric?
I think it's more the latter. I think that, you know, beer has been suffering in a lot of categories. So this is a segment, although, you know, it's a little bit different, segment of the category that's been doing well. And they're trying to get as many consumers into it. And if it's only, if it's only one gender specific, it's, you know, you're taking away half of, you know, the population. So I think that they're really trying to be cognizant and pushing it, that it's something that can be consumed by everyone, because it's, like I said, it's a segment of the market that's really had a lot of growth. And I think that they're really trying to push that.
Let's talk also about the different ways that the product is made. So if it's gluten-free, I'm presuming you can't make it in the same way that you would a typical flavored malt beverage, where you're taking grain products to make the alcohol. Eric Schmidt, can you speak to the process that enables it to be gluten-free?
No, I can't really speak to, you know, I deal with more statistics and the background behind it, but not so much how it's made.
Craig, can you speak to that?
You know, not really either, but I do know that that's a big, it is a flavored malt beverage. And I mean, the innovation really from the days of Mike's Hard Lemonade to White Claw is that they've managed to kind of mask the flavor of it, but do that without adding calories, without adding sweeteners. You know, my understanding is that they don't use vodka for these because liquor is taxed higher than flavored malt beverages are. So they're using that malt base, but that whereas Mike's Hard Lemonade needed a bunch of sweet stuff to kind of cover up the flavor, they've gotten to a point now where they have that clean, crisp sort of seltzer flavor, but still low calorie and gluten free.
So my understanding was that number of them, like White Claw, suspected that they use cane sugar and ferment that because then it can be gluten-free. Or in the case of some of the others, there's a process where they can use the grain-based alcohol and ferment that as you would with a malt liquor, but then be able to remove the gluten from that to make it gluten-free, which I thought was pretty interesting that they've developed the technology to be able to do that. If you have questions for our guests about these hard seltzers, how they're made, why they're so popular, and your thoughts on whether this is a beverage fad, we've certainly seen plenty of those, or whether this is likely to have legs, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the Air Talk page, kpecc.org. Eric, are there different levels of alcohol in these different hard seltzers, or are all of them low-alcohol beverages?
No, it's interesting you say that, because they were typically lower alcohol, so they would be around, you know, 4 or 5%. But now we're starting to see products like PBR put out a hard seltzer that was 8%, and then Four Loko, who, you know, came out with that the high alcohol content flavored malt beverage. Their thoughts are they're going to put a product out later this year that's supposed to be 14%. So while most of them are on the lower end of the ABV spectrum, there are products now coming to market that are higher.
So what are they essentially equivalent of what a light beer would be? Most of these?
Lower scale, yes.
Yeah, okay. So people could feel like, okay, I could drink a can of White Claw or Natural Light or whatever, and I'm not taking in more alcohol than I would from a can of light beer.
Correct.
All right. 866-893-KPECC. I want to thank Craig Giamona, who's with us from the Cannabis Beverage Food and Restaurant Industries. Eric Schmidt, also with us, Director of Alcohol Research at the Beverage Marketing Corporation. You're listening to Air Talk on 89.3 KPECC. Also want to alert you that coming up at noon on Fresh Air with Terry Gross, her guest will be Kate O'Neill, author of Waste, a book which gets into the big challenges in recycling now that China isn't taking all that recycled waste. What actually is getting recycled, and how are cities dealing with that? Back after a live update from Hetty.